Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am indeed Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Hey, thanks for joining us this week. Real quick, when you get a chance, do us a favor. Check us out at consumerguide.com. That's consumerguide.com. All sorts of cool stuff there, including our 2025 Best Buy pick and back episodes of the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. But what should you do, Jill?
Subscribe.
That's
yes.
Better. And by the way, I can introduce you in a moment. Last month was our best month ever.
Woo!
Thank you, new listeners. Glad people are enjoying it.
Yes.
That woo is Jill Simonillo, managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, North American Car of the Year juror, and darn, someone gave me a word, but I lost it. And freelance person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
How are
prolific
you?
Writer.
Okay, I was a little distracted a moment ago because you got up to dig through the garbage.
I did. Well, so I have Wendy's chili.
Uh-huh.
And usually they include napkins in my bag.
Uh-huh.
They did not.
Oh. There's napkins here for the donuts.
I may steal one of those.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I actually spilled anything or need it, but one never knows.
All right.
Just like to have it.
In studio with us.
Yes.
For all three segments, our good friend Ed Piotrowski. Ed, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us today. You're going to talk some cars from the Midwest Automotive Media Association Spring Rally. We'll get to that in just a second. But you can't really do a new show without talking about a new Ford recall.
Because it seems like there's one a week these days.
Yes, but this one's bonkers.
I saw it. It's like 1.1 million or something.
Yes, that's what it is. And it's fairly benign, except that we no longer know how to drive without this device, and that's the backup camera.
Yes. Yeah.
I was talking about this with Steve and Johnny last night, or Saturday night. Is that last night? Night before last.
I was going to say yesterday was Sunday.
Yeah, I'm bad with this whole week calendar thing. More than a million vehicles, all 2021 through 2024. So it seems like every single model is involved, but not every car, because they sold more than a million cars in the last 4 years. Word is going out June 16th, so you will get a letter in the mail. But basically, you already know it if your backup camera is not working.
Because, you know, it's not working.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so the interesting...
Or you've crushed a small child.
Maybe. Or run over a dog. Bicycle.
Okay.
So the interesting thing is, I was looking... So I get the weekly email from NHTSA that gives you a list of all of the recalls. And I was going through...
I find that email ponderous.
It is. But I only click on the ones that I find I feel like are going to be applicable.
Yeah.
And I noticed that there were three or four recalls this week, not only from Ford, but other automakers, all about the backup camera.
Volvo?
Yeah.
And the Volvo one's huge relative to its volume. It's 400,000 cars.
Yeah, but I feel like there's a lot going on with that.
I drive a 2022 Honda Passport, and mine was recalled for the backup camera.
Did it work?
This was a while ago. It was working at the time, but this required... It somehow required them to take out my infotainment system to do something, because I have one of those glass screen protectors on it, because I have glass screen protectors on all my screens.
Oh, and you're that kind of person. I see how you are.
Yes. Yeah, zoom one on
the. He's
on
that guy.
I am that guy. And when it came back, the screen protector was broken. So I was like, okay, he's digging there. Yeah.
But I don't know what it is with backup cameras, but they're an issue. And it's funny because it wasn't that long ago we could live without them.
Yeah. So we just bought, as if you follow us, you know, we just bought a new used car, new to us car. And my husband's like, what are the requirements? And I'm like, backup camera, heated seats. Those are my two requirements.
Oh.
Pretty easy.
Oh, good stereo.
Eh.
That's my requirement.
That's
also, that's one of those things where if you say good stereo, you're kind of automatically elevated. When I used to rent cars, and I don't do it much anymore, I used to always request a CD player. That's how long ago I used to rent cars, but I used to do it for business. And generally, if you did that, you got a free upgrade. It was a good scam, because most cars didn't have CD players as standard, and rental cars are usually cheap versions of cars.
Fair.
All right. So that's that big recall. After the first break, we talked to Mike Hanley of Cars.com about their What's the Best Compact SUV for 2025 project. big project, full testing.
Yes.
Did you look at that?
I think I looked at it when I scheduled it like months ago.
The subjective and objective evaluation is pretty comprehensive.
Oh, that's good.
So he can talk about that. Also, surprises on the list.
Okay.
So they've got 7 winners.
Awesome.
Yeah. And the order is interesting.
Okay.
And the order does not reflect volume in the industry. So there you have that. All right, let's talk about cars. You guys were both at the Mama Spring Rally, the Midwest Automotive Media Association Spring Rally.
I even have a sticker that shows it.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Nice sticker.
Yeah.
But that usually includes 100 journalists and about 100 cars, roughly.
Yep.
Big deal. And I would have gone if I didn't have a bub knee, because I love that event.
It is a great event, and you should have come anyway.
I thought about driving up for dinner.
Yeah.
I probably could have done that for free. Like, I could have snuck in and just, like, had a nice dinner for free and snuck out.
I don't know. It was pretty tight and pretty packed.
Was
every
it?
Seat was full.
Was it?
Yeah. Oh. It was pretty big. I mean, there were a lot of people there.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to know that that's a healthy event because it's important. But one of the great things about that event is going back to back to back from vehicles.
Yes.
It's a thing that we can't normally facilitate. And, mm-hmm. and once a year, twice a year sometimes, if there's a second event, we get to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed, you just wrote an article for me.
I did.
About a very interesting segment, and that's small luxury SUVs.
Yes.
Including an all-new vehicle.
Correct.
Which is mildly disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's if it had come out in 2018, fine. But yeah, this is, yeah, we're talking about the all-new for 2025 Acura ADX.
Yeah.
Which is their new entry-level SUV. Yeah, I guess they call it an SUV companion to the Integra, which was interesting that they would have come out with the Integra first rather, because it's a car.
Yeah.
Right.
Versus an SUV.
And but the ALX was already out, and they just rebadged it, so.
Yeah. Here's the thing about that. I'm already going way, way, way off track, and we don't have a lot of free time today. But the ILX and then the Integra are still both Civics. Really nice mm-hmm. Civics, and the
yes.
Civics are great.
I'm like, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. But and that's sort of what's happening here with the ADX.
Yes, yeah. They've basically done it with the Honda HR-V.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean,
generally well-liked small crossover.
Yeah, and if you look at it, the ADX from the front, he's like, oh, you know, it is an Acura, but as soon as you kind of get that side profile view, it's like, oh, that looks like a Honda HR-V.
So the big thing here is access point, right? They're probably not moving a lot of Integras, and I haven't looked at the sales number, because they're sedans.
Right.
And no one buys sedans, and small sedans, I mean, there's the Corolla and the Civic, and kind of everything else, sales-wise.
Yeah.
But Acura could use an entry-level vehicle that does some volume, and the price point here is interesting. Isn't it under 40K?
35 grand to start.
That's compelling.
And if that is the model you're looking for, yes, it is. But the version that they had at this event was, of course, the fully loaded all-wheel drive A-spec sport package and with the advanced package, which includes other, you know, high-tech goodies. This thing was over 45 grand.
That's tough.
That's very tough. It's also funny, too, because they had their refreshed RDX there, which is mm-hmm. the step up. And I mean, yes, it is more expensive, but it's, you know, you could pick up a 1 or 2 year old used one for probably about the same amount of money as a loaded ADX, and that's what I would go for.
Right.
Because it's bigger, more powerful.
And that's an interesting point, too. I don't know how many people cross shop new and used, but sometimes if you're looking at something, you know, if you go 2-3 years old, you still got a little warranty left, and maybe you can step up a full class.
Mm-hmm.
And the RDX, traditionally, fantastic vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Fun to drive, sporty, quick. Yeah. Isn't it like a Civic Type R drivetrain almost?
Yeah. So that's pretty
cool.
Feels
like it. Yeah.
So what disappointed you?
Mostly, aside from the price of the fully loaded model, it was kind of the overall refinement of it. It felt a little too Civic for my liking. And the engine was shockingly loud. Like, it's the same engine that's in the CRV,
mm-hmm.
and the CRV, the last one I drove, it felt quieter and more refined.
Mm. It is funny how that happens, where you have basically the same engine, but it's packaged differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, smaller vehicle, probably just more noise.
And even the underhood shape. There's things we don't understand that acoustic engineers struggle with, but... Oh, what else did you drive? You drove talk about the Alfa.
Yeah. For 2025, Alfa Romeo brought their Tonale, which is their entry-level SUV. And it's
kind of the same story.
I liked this one a lot more, though. But yeah, this is basically the upmarket version of a Dodge Hornet,
right.
Which, you know, as we know, hasn't exactly set the world on fire for
The Hornet, sales. And there's a long story there, yeah. But I think Dodge may have messed up the Dodge brand, and people aren't going there anymore for mainstream products because now it's the muscle car brand.
Yep.
The other thing is that car came in a little expensive and maybe a little overtly sporty. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how many people cross-shopped it. I don't know how many people drove it. Like, this thing's a live wire.
Yeah, and it's also very small.
Yeah.
Like, it's very, like, I'm only 5'8", and I had a very hard time fitting behind myself. You know, like, I had to set my driving position comfortably, sit in the back seat behind myself, and, like, my knees are up against the seat back. It was not.
So that car was launched with, I'm just going to say it, a terrible plug-in hybrid drivetrain. Now,
and they have brought out a gas-only version, uses a 2-liter turbo.
Thank you, Lord.
Yeah, 268 horsepower, 295 pound-feet of torque. And, I haven't driven the hybrid, but, you know, I reference our review of it that says, you know, what a not great experience that was. This is 180 degrees different. Like, it is a little on the loud side, but it's very quick. It feels sporty. Yeah. It handles really nice. And it's not exactly comparable, but if you order one and they have a couple of different option packages, so like slightly less than loaded with all wheel drive, which is standard, it comes in at about $43,000. And like compared to the ADX, I take the Tenali every day of the week and twice.
Wow, an Alpha for a grand less than an Acura.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned that it's loud. So two interesting things about sound there real quick. The plug-in hybrid, unfortunately, has very inconsistent noise output because sometimes you're electric only.
Right.
So you don't get that drive it around town regular exhaust note you might want. Also, I think that in the Alpha, that exhaust note is appropriate. It's just kind of a very visceral vehicle. And if you don't want that, don't buy that car.
No.
Yeah, exactly. No.
But one thing, I had to point this out, I didn't mention it in the article, that I actually thought was really cool is, you know, every car's got the digital dashboard now where it's just an LCD screen. But like this one, that you can get, you know, air fingers quote, analog gauges, but they're kind of styled in like the 60s Alfa Romeo Spider, you know.
That's cool. Ford does that with the Mustang.
It's really neat.
That's cool.
I generally love my analog gauges, but I was like, okay, I can dig this.
I no longer take note of whether or not they're real or not. That's where I've gotten to. Like if the LCD gauges are fake enough and good enough, I'm fine with it.
What really hacks me off is when there's a digital screen that you can't do anything with. Like, just give me stupid effing digital or analog gauges if you're going to give me a screen that I can't configure the way I want it.
I drove the BMW i4, right? Yeah, the i4. The electric vehicle, and that's got the digital dash, and I love that vehicle. Blast to drive, really good example of an electric vehicle. Everything about it was likable, but I could not figure out what to do with the dash. There were like 17 configurations, and all of them seemed basically the same and didn't change the information I was getting. I was just irritated because I couldn't land on something I wanted to see. I always want to see miles driven and fuel economy at the same time.
Yep.
And I couldn't find that.
That's annoying.
It is.
All right, so note to automakers.
Yes.
We want to see miles driven and fuel economy.
They're easily accessible.
Yes.
And I just drove the 4Runner, the new 4Runner, and it didn't have a trip odometer button. Like, the thing about Toyotas was, like, the trip odometer button. It's so simple.
Yeah. And it literally said, I think, trip odo.
Just trip. Yeah.
Like, the handiest thing in the world. All right. Now, so you also drove the BMW X3.
Yes.
Which had to be an entirely different experience.
Yes. You know, it definitely captures the essence of the fun to drive essence of a BMW. It just sounds absolutely amazing. When you're putting it through, this was the M50 version of the X3. So it has the turbo V6 with the mild hybrid drivetrain. The only thing I couldn't wrap my head around this was just the interior looked so cheap.
Yeah.
For a $76,000.
Was it gray?
I was like black with the beige inserts.
When you and I worked together at Consumer Guide, we had a long-term BMW X5, I think 4.8i, I think is what it was called at the time.
I loved that thing.
It was a fantastic car, a flawless car almost, except the mileage was bad. But that one, the interior was gray and black. And if you weren't looking, like if you were just sort of looking at it, you're like, this is a cheap interior. But nothing you touched was actually cheap.
This, it kind of was.
Oh, well, that's disappointing. That's disappointing.
Yeah.
And I've heard a couple of people say that. That wasn't one of the vehicles that I got behind the wheel of. But yeah. My roommate actually remarked on the cheapness of the interior for the price.
Yes.
Oh, that's disappointing. Yeah. The X3 has always been a blast to drive. I haven't seen the new one or the new interior. But I did take note of BMWs without black gray interiors seem to have nicer looking interiors. But all right, Jill, you drove some EVs up at
I did. You know,
up
I
in Elkhart, Lake Wisconsin.
Yes, I felt like I was kind of like on EV overload. There were a lot of electric vehicles to choose from, which is great. For those who may not have been to at Road America recently, they've actually
I think that's most people.
Most people. They've installed like 240 volt plugs.
Good.
Everywhere.
Good.
So, like, you could bring 100 EVs and probably charge them all. So it was.
We had a trouble with, a lot with those. Of EVs. They had them for camping. And yeah. We kept popping the fuses.
Oops.
That was a few years ago.
Yeah. No. So no problems. I actually drove an EV up there and then plugged into one of the 240 volt and then was able to drive home with 100. But yeah. So I drove the. I'll talk about the. I drove a lot of EVs, but I want to talk about the BMW iX and the Cadillac Escalade IQ.
Okay.
So this was like my first exposure to both of those vehicles. And I mean, obviously one is like full size and the other is not, but
so
both
the
luxury.
iX is roughly BMW X5
such. Yeah.
Okay. So mid-size crossover.
Yeah. And I mean, I had to say in the Escalade IQ, did you get the chance to drive that at all?
I did not. I did drive several other EVs, but not that one.
It's taken bougie to a new level. You like it's very pedestrian to close your own door these days, and so like it has a little digital screen where you can open and close your doors with a swipe.
Unnecessary.
Totally unnecessary. But I have to say, I probably spent 5 minutes just opening and closing the doors.
Saturday night when I was talking to Steve and Johnny on air, we talked about Cadillac's naming, and Johnny wanted to know why it wasn't the Escaladic.
Escalating.
Which I've heard before, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's IQ.
Yes.
And then IQL.
Yes.
Which is just confusing.
Whatever.
But yeah. But how is that vehicle?
You know, I really liked it. And I had a lot of fun with it beyond the opening and closing of the doors. I thought it drove really well. I liked it so much, I actually requested it as a test vehicle. So I do have it coming.
We were supposed to get that in advance, and we didn't.
We did not.
Yeah.
But I do have
Hello
it coming.
Cadillac.
It is in the Chicago fleet, so I think I have it in about a month. So I'll look forward to taking a longer drive in it, but quick impressions, really well done, nice finishing touches, comfortable seats, and it just, it had the electric pep you would expect from instantaneous torque.
It is a profoundly heavy vehicle.
Yeah, it's very heavy, but you cannot feel it.
I think it's a 205 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah.
So monstrous.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. You can't charge it all the way overnight. Like, it's going to take forever to charge.
Yeah, if you're plugging it into 240.
Yeah. But you are getting an awful lot of range
right.
for that time you're plugging in.
Right.
So don't be too alarmed by that fact. But yeah, it's going to take you hours.
Yeah.
Many hours.
Many hours. But I thought it was really cool. The one downside, we've discussed this many times, it does not have Apple CarPlay. So it has Google built-in operating system, but is missing CarPlay and Auto. BMW iX, I geeked out over the details. Like, you were talking about the X3 being super cheap. Like, I would say the iX was the opposite of that. From the stitching to it, on the side door, it has crystal controls to adjust your seats.
Wow. How much was that bad boy?
I think I just posted a TikTok of it today, and I think I said it was $92,000.
So almost 100 grand for that. And then the Cadillac was about 140, right?
Yeah. It may have even been
closer
to 150.
These are some big dollar EVs.
And, you know, as you would expect from a BMW, it had sporty ride and handling, and it just, I loved the look of the iX. I also requested that. So I will have more to come on that vehicle coming up. And, you know, it has iDrive and it has like a crystal touch controller so that you don't have to touch the screen because that's also very pedestrian. And I don't know. I liked both of the vehicles for different reasons and I'm looking forward to spending more time with them.
Yeah, I haven't driven either, and I'm looking forward to that. But I have driven a couple of BMW EVs, and BMW does EV very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I talked about the i4. It was just the rear drive,
mm-hmm.
so one engine, 335 horsepower, which isn't a load of horsepower for a BMW these days, but it felt really quick. And the thing about horsepower in electric vehicles is that horsepower doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah, no,
because throttle
torque.
Response is immediate.
Yeah, it's the instantaneous
right, and there's
torque.
A great deal of torque. So
yeah.
You don't get the full picture just from a horsepower number.
Right.
All right, we should take a break. When we come back, we talk to Mike Hanley of Cars.com. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. And in studio with us today, nice surprise, Ed Piotrowski. Ed, how's it going?
Oh, it's going.
All right. Jill, real quick, help me out.
Yeah, so we're done with you. Now we're moving on to Tom.
Yep.
So, Tom, are you on social media? It's like, hi, bye. You're on social media?
We have to move along. We have a schedule.
Moving along. Got
we
it.
We have things to do. I am on social media. All I'm going to say is I'm Car Guy Tom on X, Twitter, and Blue Sky. And on Blue Sky, I am increasingly posting pictures of things I see, cars I see, watching Adam 12.
Okay.
That's how old I am. I really enjoy
Adam
12.
You are old.
And I've talked about this every episode. It is amazing the cars you see in the background on Adam 12.
Okay.
Porsche 914s everywhere. Strange, strange European stuff. A lot of British stuff you wouldn't expect to see. But yeah, if you grew up in Chicago like I did, these cars are incredibly weird to you.
Okay.
All right. Cars.com, those guys.
Yes.
They do those really guys. Good comprehensive tests.
Yes, they do.
And they've done another one. On the phone with us is Mike Hanley. Mike is the senior road test editor at Cars. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Thanks for joining us today. Mike, have you ever been on the show before?
I think this might be my first time.
All right, well,
welcome.
Glad to have you. We've had most of the Cars crew on now at this point. But you guys just put together a really big comprehensive road test. I enjoyed reading that today. But tell us about it and why you did it.
Yeah, so we brought together 7 popular compact SUVs recently, tested them with a variety of things we put them through. And we really focused on this class because it's such a popular vehicle class for shoppers right now. I'm just kind of looking at sales for last year of the 7 vehicles in our test. Every one of 10 vehicles sold in the U.S. was one of these vehicles. So these really have a lot of appeal out there.
Mike, I did my own math here. In the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, yeah, the top 7 vehicles in this class come to almost 1.9 million vehicles. It is stunning.
Yeah, it's a huge number.
It's stunning how popular this is. And if you ask the question, whatever happened to midsize sedans or large sedans, this is what happened to them.
Yeah.
Those people are now driving these.
That's right. Yep. It's migrated to crossovers kind of with that appeal of ruggedness, more utility, and functionality.
Yeah, and perceived value too, right? I mean, people see an SUV and they see more storage space. And a lot of people want all-wheel drive, right?
Yeah, I mean, we had all-wheel drive for all of the vehicles
in
our test. And also, we had a mix of gas-only vehicles and hybrids. So we had 3 hybrids in the mix, 4 gas vehicles. We had opened it up to both because we really saw the increasing number of hybrids that are being offered and that are being bought by shoppers, too.
So I have a question for you, and this is strictly an opinion on your part. Why do you think people are flocking to hybrids now? Gas isn't especially expensive historically. And to some extent, is it because now that we're moving on to EVs, hybrids are less scary? Or is it because manufacturers like Toyota have gone nuts and they started selling a bunch of hybrid-only vehicles, kind of eliminating the choice to some degree?
Yeah, I think the appeal's there both with they're not as expensive as going full EV.
Okay.
There's still the familiarity of kind of the, you know, being able to use gas. There's the greater efficiency. There's in some cases the greater performance too with mm-hmm. with the hybridization of some of these vehicles. So I think it has become less of a foreign concept than it was in the past,
mm-hmm.
where a hybrid is now seen as kind of it's more familiar. And like you said, especially with Toyota, they've moved some of their vehicles, like the Camry and the new RAV4, to hybrid only.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about how you guys performed this test. Seven cars. You guys got a bunch of your editors together to do this, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So our seven vehicles in the test, we had the Chevrolet Equinox, which was redesigned for 2025, the Honda CR-V Hybrid, the Hyundai Tucson Hybrid, which was refreshed for 2025, the Mazda CX-5, the Nissan Rogue, the Subaru Forester, which was another redesigned vehicle for 2025, and the Toyota RAV4 Hybrid. So we brought all of these vehicles to Austin, Texas area, and we had three editors on staff who were judges for this test.
Okay.
So we spent a week with these vehicles, driving them back to back to get judges' impressions on comfort, driving performance, utility, ergonomics, user interface, all those things that shoppers care about when they're considering a vehicle. We also took them all on a roughly 250-mile fuel economy road trip.
Cool.
So that was to get real-world fuel economy impressions on all of them, not just the label on the sticker. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, we measured their cargo space using our own methodology. We put child safety seats in them and scored fit and ease of use with those in terms of installation, and assessed safety features and value considering their as-tested prices. So there are a lot of categories that went into the total finishing order and scoring.
Let's talk about that finishing order, because I'm very interested in how these placed. You want to go from top to bottom or bottom to top? It's your call.
Let's just start at the top.
Okay.
Or the top finisher, because it's probably the most interesting one, or one people are most interested in. It was the Nissan Rogue, was our winner.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually the third time in a row the Rogue has won this test. We typically test compact SUVs every few years, just mm-hmm. because the class changes a lot in that time frame. And so we've brought back the Rogue because it's been a winner. And even this time around, it fended off newer competitors and was our overall winner. And it really won because it was incredibly well-rounded, well in all of the categories, and was a winner in a number of them, like front seat and back seat comfort, interior quality, and also vehicle user interface. So it won categories. It didn't do poorly in any of them, and that's really what led to its win. I think one of the things that's worth noting, though, it was the most expensive in our test, and not
okay.
by a small margin. So its as-tested price for the Platinum all-wheel drive was a little over $48,000. So
That's a lot.
That is a bunch.
Yeah, that's a lot for a compact SUV. It was nearly $5,000 more expensive than the Tucson Hybrid. But our scoring and our value component, we factor in as-tested price
okay.
in terms of that. So it got knocked down because of that, but it was still strong enough overall to win the test. And that $48,000 is actually kind of a little bit less than the average price of a new car these days,
yep.
but
right.
still the most expensive in our test. But it also, it came with a lot of premium features for that. It had hands-free driving, Nissan's ProPilot Assist 2.1. So that was kind of a potentially unexpected feature in this class. Just a very luxurious interior, and that kind of elevated it to the top.
Cool. You know, there's two headwinds facing that vehicle, too. One of them is the fact that that's actually a three-cylinder. I don't know how many people know that.
Yeah.
But it's surprisingly smooth, and you don't really pick up on that unless you're looking for it. And it's still a CVT. And in the past, Nissan has had trouble with those, but their new crop of CVTs, surprisingly refined.
Yeah, no problems.
Yeah, and in fact, Consumer Guide named the Nissan Rogue its 2025 Best Buy. Were you going to say something, Ed?
I was just saying, my parents actually have own this generation of Rogue, and they're
very happy.
Very happy with it.
All right. What else do we have?
So second place was the Honda CR-V Hybrid, and it was a sport touring trim level. Mm. So again, it was another well-rounded vehicle. It did really well in ride comfort, fuel economy, interior space, cargo room, just, you know, something, maybe not the flashiest technology on the inside, like a Honda's multimedia system was definitely a bit more dated in appearance than some of the other ones, and the interior wasn't as, I think some would say, probably stylish as some of the newer ones, but everything's very functional in it. Everything worked really well. There was a really low, I think, learning curve for people getting into a new vehicle who haven't been in a new vehicle in a while, and just does a lot of the things well that someone looking for a vehicle either to, you know, haul their family, haul their kids in, I think it would still serve them really well in that regard.
Now, this is the new Honda serial hybrid system, correct?
This is the one I think that came out in 2022 or 3?
2023.
Okay. And did you guys see the good mileage as a result of that?
We did. Our mileage in it was, I can pull that up actually. So our observed mileage was 36.5 miles per gallon. And that was just behind actually the Toyota RAV4 Hybrid. It was the leader in our real world fuel economy drive at 37.9 miles per gallon. So it, even though the RAV4 Hybrid, you know, one of the older hybrid systems in this test, it's still really delivered in the real world.
That's cool. All right, what else do we have?
In third place, we had the Hyundai Tucson Hybrid. So that was a limited trim level, so their high-end trim of the Tucson Hybrid. It also did pretty well in terms of fuel efficiency, but not as good as the Honda. It got 33.6 miles per gallon in our testing. So a little bit behind them and just above the best gas-only vehicle in our test, which was a Subaru Forester that got 31.2 miles per gallon. But the Tucson Hybrid really well in terms of value. Kind of a really well-equipped vehicle for the money. As tested price was a little over $43,000.
Okay.
Came with a lot of features, has a really solid warranty. But what it came up short on, kind of surprisingly, is our judges really found it uncomfortable in the driver's seat, in the front seat. Just the ergonomics of the front of the cabin, whether it was our taller editors or our shorter editors, no one could really get comfortable there, which was a little bit surprising in a newer vehicle. Some of it was related to the new dashboard design because it has the widescreen digital gauge cluster right next to a widescreen infotainment system, and the steering wheel kind of blocked the view of the gauge cluster, which
you're
not
in here
finding more and more.
Yeah, and in my brief time with Hyundai, with recent Hyundais, the ultra widescreen dashboard blend of infotainment and instrumentation just doesn't do it for me.
Interesting.
Yeah, as a shorty, I have no problems. Yeah. my steering wheel does not block the gauges.
Yeah. And I got to say, I couldn't agree with you more about the CR-V's kind of dated infotainment system. As a relatively recent Honda owner, yes.
Yeah. And I'm actually surprised you guys didn't find the CR-V seats uncomfortable. I think like Honda seats and General Motors seats are two of the most uncomfortable seats in the business.
Interesting, yeah, because it was scored fairly favorably amongst our group, the front and backseat comfort for the CR-V. But yeah, that UI, the screens and controls, like they work really well. There's no glitchiness, but they don't look really new.
No, they do not.
Kind of what we found.
All right, number four on the list is the Mazda CX-5 2.5 turbo signature. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, this was really the sports car of the group, as you'd expect, being a Mazda. It puts the focus squarely on the driver. It led all of our driving-related tests, from powertrain to handling to braking. This was the turbo engine, so the optional high-output engine. We were using premium fuel in all these, so Mazda actually rates the engine higher with premium, 256 horsepower. It really felt strong, great to drive, but not great to use in some respects because it has Mazda's.
I was going to say, are you going to talk about the infotainment system?
Yeah, it's really troublesome infotainment system.
You must be.
I'm the only one who likes that.
I was looking for cars, I did not buy a Mazda CX-30 because I could not stand that infotainment.
It doesn't bother me. I don't love it. I don't hate it. It doesn't bother me.
I find it the easiest to use without looking.
And that's the point.
I think one of the things our judges were unhappy with it about is that sometimes it's a touchscreen, sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
It varies depending on if you're in motion or not. Yeah. And that was... And they also didn't like just the menu structure that Mazda's put together, though I think as an owner, it could be something you could get comfortable with over time. But in a field filled with touchscreen systems that are pretty straightforward and easy to use, the Mazda kind of stood out as one that was more difficult to use.
Mike, I just drove this vehicle, and I drove it after something with a much more refined drivetrain, and I find that the 2.5 turbo from Mazda, lots of fun, lots of spunk, but a little bit crude. Did you guys pick that up on that?
It didn't strike me as much as that. It was one that was lower in depthly, as you might expect, in terms of fuel efficiency.
Yeah.
Because that high output, you know, really kind of hurt it in that area. It was right down with the Chevy Equinox in terms of worst in our fuel economy test, at right around 28 miles per gallon. But it didn't seem, it didn't strike me as gravelly. Was that what you're kind of coming through on your end?
Yeah, a little gravelly, a little bit throbby at idle. That was my take.
Okay.
All right. Mike, we're running out of time, but real quick, tell us about the last three here.
In fifth place was the Subaru Forester.
Uh-huh.
And I think the thing that, it's the one you'd really want to consider if outward visibility, just being able to see easily around you. I know that's getting harder and harder as cars get
That is a long-term Forester really, characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. And it's still really a defining one. It's really still easy to see out of. The Equinox, which was all new, I mean, it was kind of the style leader of all these in terms of exterior design, interior style.
When did that happen? Kind of when did Chevys get good-looking? It's like the last couple of years.
With the Trax. I think that's when it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that... Yeah, the Trax kind of ushered that in a little bit. The Equinox, which was redesigned for this time around, kind of continues that. We weren't judging style as much, though, here. It didn't really get factored in, but it was a really stylish and affordable vehicle at just under $40,000 for the active trim we had.
Okay.
And in seventh place was the RAV4 Hybrid.
Not a surprise.
Even though it's like the best passenger or best-selling passenger vehicle in the U.S. now, it did not perform great against these newer ones in a lot of our judged categories. Got great fuel economy, but it came up short in areas from everything from kind of interior quality to powertrain refinement and noise and quietness on the inside. Still great, gets great fuel economy, though, so if that's most important to you, you should still look at the RAV4 Hybrid.
Thing about the RAV4, and Damon Bell now works for you guys, 6 foot, 6 inch Damon Bell, used to be a member of the Consumer Guide team. He's tall, I'm wide, and we had the same complaint about the RAV4 when it was redesigned to this generation, and that's that it's a little small up front for drivers.
Yep. And for the front passenger too.
Yeah, because the console's wider than in other vehicles, so you're kind of squished east to west, and then Damon had a hard time getting in there. He's 6'6", 6'5", so
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting that it's the least accommodating for big and tall folks.
Well,
but also crazy bestseller.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great seller, but I'm not surprised that it ended up last on the list because it's a little bit long of the tooth. I mean, they definitely were due for the redesign. So I'm looking forward to the 2026 model.
Yeah. Which is coming out this fall.
Yeah. We should see it by the end of the year.
Mike, this is really cool. Thank you for joining us. Tell us how people can check out this full list.
Yeah. If you head over to cars.com/news, you can see photos, videos, and all the information on this test.
Sounds good. Mike, thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. That was Mike Hanley with cars.com. We're going to take a break. And when we come back,
quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of The Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit greensenseshow.com or listen to The Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. He's Ed. Ed Piotrowski joining us this week. Thanks for being here, Ed.
Thank you for having me.
Ed's sticking around for the quiz. Mm-hmm. But first, I'm just going to check out for a couple of minutes. You go, Jill.
Whatever. I have social media, too. You can find me at Jill Simonello, or I use the hashtag CarDuJour on most social media. If I'm not there, you should let me know because I want to be there.
That's too accommodating.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know. I like social media and I want to be on the
thing. I'm not that accessible.
You are not. I'm pretty accessible.
People get as much of time as I choose to hand out.
Yeah, no.
Through the channels I choose.
I choose all the channels. I'm very prolific on TikTok. Posted reviews of the Escalade and the iX there.
Yep.
But YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. See, now I'm going to draw it out.
I'm on
LinkedIn.
I'm on Blue Sky literally because
Blue
Steve
Sky.
King called me one day and like, let's do this now. And
I thought you were going to say he created the account for you and sent you the password.
He basically did. He basically did. But those guys, Steve and Johnny, really not friends of X. So,
yeah.
And it's gotten way, way, way too political. It's hard to do stuff there. And even the car guys that I know there, who are all awesome, they're at odds over political things. It still stays friendly, but it's getting harder and harder to do that.
Yeah.
So, did you get everything out there?
Sure.
I wasn't paying attention.
I know.
Okay.
And you interrupted, but that's fine.
It's quiz time. We'll get today's topic. It says there are five questions plus a bonus question.
Okay.
Since there are two players today, the player with the most points wins.
Got it.
A bonus question might matter today.
It mattered the last time we had somebody participating in the quiz.
Who was that?
Zach. Prattle.
Zach Prattle. Yeah. That's right. His stuff's great.
Yes.
People should check that
Shooting
out.
Shooting cars.
All right. Today's topic is, are you ready? HQ! Exclamation point. I'm going to give you a company. You have to tell me where their international headquarters is. It's that easy.
Are you going to? No, it's not that easy. Are you going to give us multiple choice?
I am.
Or, okay.
Yeah.
Then maybe it is easy.
Ed is our guest. He goes first. Ed,
I punked myself. I said it was easy.
Yeah. Ed, I just need you to tell me where is Stellantis headquartered? Are you ready? Auburn Hills, Michigan, Hoofddorp, Netherlands, or Duluth, Minnesota?
Auburn Hills, Michigan.
No, Hoofddorp. The Stellantis.
Oh, Stellantis.
Stellantis.
So you didn't even ask me the question.
Okay. Oh, shoot.
You punked yourself.
All right, I'm going to give you another one.
Okay.
Later.
Okay.
All right.
Global headquarters, not North American.
Okay. I tell you what, we're just going to pretend like you got that one wrong.
Okay.
For simplicity's sake.
Okay.
We're also running out of time.
Well, we've got 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That we're not running out of time.
13.
Oh, whatever.
All right.
Your watch is wrong then.
My bad.
But I do, to be fair, I would have said probably Auburn Hills too, because what in the hell is Hoofddorf?
Well, the thing was,
Dusseldorf?
There was some politics here,
mm-hmm.
right? Stellantis, now international, and even though they're going to do most of their business in North America, it would have been fair to the other 96 brands of Stellantis.
Well, I would have thought Italy, not Germany, as a headquarters.
It was Italy for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, Fiat Chrysler was headquartered in Italy, I think.
Yeah, if you'd said something in Italy,
London?
I would have gone with that.
I think briefly London.
Really?
Yeah, it was weird.
Okay.
All right, never mind. We're just going to pretend like there wasn't a first question.
Okay, just remember there's two of us here.
Yep. Yeah, but okay. Jill, you go first this time. Are you ready?
Okay.
Where is Tesla headquartered? Are you ready?
All right.
Fremont, California, Austin, Texas, or Rockford, Illinois?
Definitely not Rockford, Illinois.
All right.
I know they have a big factory in Austin, Texas, but I'm trying to decide if they've... Because I believe they were headquartered in Fremont.
Hmm.
And I'm trying to decide if they've moved their headquarters to Austin.
Hmm.
I'm gonna stay with Fremont.
Fremont,
yeah.
Sir. Fremont,
no, because I think
Austin, Rockford.
No, because I think everyone's favorite Twitter personality. I refuse to call it X.
Same.
I thought he made some sort of big deal about leaving California and moving to Texas, so I'm going to say Austin.
You're correct. Uh-huh. Yes, and he did make a huge deal about it, and mostly he was like dissing California in the process.
Well, because he was becoming Republican.
Ed is on the board. All right, Ed, this question goes to you first. Where is Volvo Cars headquartered? Gothenburg, Sweden, Hangzhou, China, or Cedar Rapids, Iowa?
Well, it's not Cedar Rapids, but oh, that's tough because Volvo's owned by Geely, which is a Chinese consortium. Oh, boy. See, that's where my gut tells me to go. But I'm gonna go with Sweden.
Jill? Sweden, China, or Iowa?
I'm going to say Sweden as well.
Yeah, they're still in Sweden. So they're an independent company wholly owned by Geely, which is headquartered in Hangzhou. Very nice. Ed's got two. Jill's got one. This is anybody's game. Great bonus question today, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Jill, this one goes to you. Where is Porsche headquartered? Stuttgart, Munich, or Mayberry?
I want it to be Mayberry. I really want
so
it to
I.
be Mayberry.
So do I.
But I'm going to say...
I have a friend who just told me he hated the Andy Griffith Show. Like, that's a strong opinion to have.
That is very strong opinion. Yeah, yeah. That's like, what is it?
It's Richie, like one of my favorite shows.
The Cunninghams?
No.
Opie?
No.
Opie
is correct.
Wasn't he rich?
No.
In the Cunningham? Was he rich in Cunningham?
Oh, yes, he was. Yes,
I'm like, please tell me I'm not going crazy.
You're just confusing shows, and it was messing with me.
But Opie later became Richie.
That's true.
Okay, thank you. Stuttgart.
Stuttgart. You're saying Porsche is headquartered in Stuttgart, not Munich or Mayberry?
At Stuttgart.
It is, indeed. Stuttgart, Germany. This one's close. Jill has two. Ed has three. Nothing headquartered in Cedar Rapids that I'm aware of. Automotively.
I do not believe so.
Finally, Ed, you go to this one's yours first. Where is Subaru headquartered? Ibizu, Shibuya, Japan, Tokyo, or Palos Heights?
You should have said Lafayette, Indiana, by the way.
Yeah.
That would have been more confusing.
Yes. That would have been.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or
I could say Kokomo and mess the waters up a little bit.
Or you could have said, was it Cherry Hill, New Jersey, I think, too?
Who was in Cherry Hill? Was that Mercedes?
Mercedes or Volvo?
No. It was, wasn't it?
That's their North American headquarters.
Jaguar Land Rover?
That sounds right.
And someone was there.
Yeah.
Ibizu, Shibuya.
I think I'm going to go with Shibuya.
All right. Jill, Subaru headquartered. Shibuya, Tokyo, Palos Heights.
Yeah, I don't think it's Tokyo. I don't think they're there. And I know it's not Palos Heights, so I have to go with Shibuya as well.
You both said Shibuya?
Yeah.
You both get points.
All right.
Shibuya.
Ed has won.
Yeah?
Nice job,
but
Ed.
I think it's only because you didn't give me the first question.
Maybe.
I think I get an extra point. Maybe. I think it's a tie.
Let's call it a tie.
All right. Bonus question. Are you ready?
Because I want to hear the bonus question, too.
All right. This one goes to Jill first. Jill, we've been talking a lot about cheese on the show.
Have we?
We have.
Okay.
The
I'll take
Welsh,
your word for it.
The Welsh Cheese Company, that's welshcheesecompany.co.uk, sells 60 varieties of cheese. Which of the following is not a variety of Welsh cheese available from the Welsh Cheese Company?
Okay, rarebit.
We've
talked about rarebit before.
We have.
Rabbit.
All right, these are the... Are you ready?
Yes.
Celtic Promise, Teffy Seaweed, Mormon Lester... Pearl Well, P-E-R-L-W-E-L, Pearl Well. One of those is fake, the other three are real. I'm happy to read them again.
Yeah.
Celtic Promise, Teffy Seaweed, Mormon Lester, Pearl Well.
None of these sound real.
Three
and
of them
especially
are.
Because you said Celtic instead of Celtic.
Oh, I should say Celtic. I'm sorry. I'm thinking basketball.
Yeah, not the Celtics.
Yeah. That's a big mistake because I'm a Mark Knopfler fan, and he dips into Celtic music pretty often. So my bad.
Yeah, totally.
Apologies to Mark.
Totally your bad.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you're going to have to read them again. I, like, got all nothing right. here.
Right. List is less funny now, so this is the last time I can read it.
Okay.
Celtic. Ed. Celtic Promise.
Uh-huh.
Teffy Seaweed. Mormon Lester. Pearl Well. P-E-R-L Well. W-E-L.
I'm going to go with the first one.
Celtic Promise?
Yeah.
That's your fake?
Yeah.
Ed?
I was going to say the same thing under the logic of Celtic would be Irish, and the UK and Ireland don't necessarily get along very well.
Oh, interesting. So you're going with
Celtic
is fake?
Yeah.
No, that one's real. Celtic Promise
is, it number two?
Is a raw milk cow cheese.
Oh, okay. Oh.
The Teffy Seaweed is a Gouda style with seaweed. The Mormon Lester is fake.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, see, and I thought Lester would have been real because it's spelled, like, it's Leicester, spelled Lester, or pronounced Lester. So I would have thought that was real. That was.
I only pronounce that correctly because I've watched the Monty Python cheese shop sketch.
Okay.
300,000 times in my
life. Well, and you've probably had Worcestershire sauce.
Sure I have.
So Worcester, spelled Worcester.
All right, Pearl Well is a glorious and unique cross between a traditional brie and a kefili.
But it was the Mormon one that was
That's
fake.
The fake.
All right.
All right. We've gone through this, and we have 6 minutes to burn. And there was something I wanted to talk about.
Oh,
what
so
was
this
it?
Was the real reason why he was hushing us
because
he had something he wanted to talk about that he can't remember.
I forgot. But I do have something to tell you, and maybe you saw this on the way in.
Okay.
But I'm driving the Lexus LX700 in...
It's that nori green.
Nori green.
I love that color.
Yeah, we've talked about that. It's kind of a translucent deep green.
Yeah.
Very nice. Glad to see it again. Glad to see it again.
Yeah. And also, we should make note that I will not be here next week.
We can.
Yeah.
I already forgot that.
I know.
Yeah.
I see where the love is.
So I'll be calling the Sons of Speed. One of them may be joining us.
Yes.
And next week, you said we're talking to Sam Fiorani.
Yes.
So many questions.
So many questions.
The world's a strange place these days.
I am sorry not to be here for this conversation, but I'm going to be at Rebel Training next week.
There you go.
With my new partner.
Give us some pics to post from that. And then we should get a pic of the three of us, by the way, before we go.
Yes.
Just some housekeeping that I'm taking care of on air for some reason.
Because you have 6 minutes.
But speaking of color...
Okay.
You guys were up at the rally. You saw 100 cars all lined up.
We did.
Yep.
What's going on with color?
There's a lot of white, gray, and black.
Yeah, that's sad. They're sad because we've seen some good colors. First of all, was the Tonale that you drove, Ed, red?
That was in red.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good red. Yeah. Oh, I wanted to talk about this. Alfa Romeo.
Okay.
The Stelvio. I drove the
Squirrel.
Stelvio. We talked a little bit about the Stelvio.
Yes, we did.
And while I have my issues with Alfa Romeo, and I certainly hated the Tonale plug-in hybrid, the Stelvio was a choice. Well, you and I drove it to Wisconsin.
We did.
The thing about that I didn't realize is they have killed the Quadrifoglio.
Yes. You didn't know that?
No. I lost that somewhere. Yeah, I don't know why, because I wrote that review already, I think, and I should have gone to the website. But, yeah, the old 505 horsepower twin turbocharged 2.9 liter V6. Gone. And it's probably gone because it was expensive, impossible to insure, and really low volume.
Yeah.
So they're just down to the four cylinders, but the four cylinders are a joy.
I've heard rumors that perhaps they might be bringing something back, though, of power.
Yeah. Well, that lineup's getting a little thin.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. Well, I listened to a great episode of the Automotive News podcast, and they had a really great interview with
the
Chris.
Daily Drive with my good friend Jamie
Your
Butters.
Good friend Jamie
my
Butters.
Good friend. Yeah.
But they had a really long interview with Chris Fuel, who is the CEO of Alfa Romeo and Chrysler, and she talks a lot about not specifically what's coming, but that things are coming.
Well, that's good. Good to see stuff. Because if you're making a list of things you think are going to happen to Stellantis in the near or midterm, maybe pulling Alfa or Maserati or both out of the U.S., not crazy.
Yeah.
And that may also happen to the Fiat brand. And I've talked about this before. The Fiat brand never should have come back to the United States. Those vehicles, the first 500, the 500, the 500X, the 500L, should have been Dodge products. Dodge would have had some mainstream products to sell. People would have had a brand that they're not afraid of. Fiat left the U.S.
Yeah, went under a cloud of bad stuff.
Yeah, it just had reliability issues when it backed out of the U.S. And when it came back, people who remembered the brand at all didn't remember it well.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a good brand for that. And it doesn't turn out to be a good brand for an EV now either. Mm. Which is sad because that car's a delight to drive.
I really enjoyed the 500 EV.
The 500E.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun little car. And if you need an EV, that's not a bad way to go. But the problem is it's a little pricey. It doesn't qualify for the tax credit. And it's going to seem even pricier if the tax credit goes away.
And the range isn't great.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
With, weird stuff.
With Alpha, too. Like, they're just, the product is just thin on the ground, too. Like, I like just going to random car dealers' websites just to see what kind of inventory they have. And just even in the Chicago area, you know, there are like four or five Alpha dealers, and they really don't have much in terms of new product. And there's still a lot of 2024s on the ground, too.
Yeah.
And if you want, like, a, just as an interesting option, like a Julia four-cylinder, they're giving them still have new 2024s for like 12 grand off sticker. These are like low to mid-40s.
If you're willing to take a little bit of an adventure, lease that car for 2 years.
Yes. Lease it, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're not on the hook for anything, which is a great way to go. But I've noticed that, too. One of the funny things about Fiat coming into the U.S., too, and part of the reason that it is still here, is that Stellantis insisted on standalone Fiat dealers. They had to be, not standalone, but they had to be separate franchises. They weren't sold through other ones. So there are specific dealers that are still hungry for product and still pissed off, frankly, that they didn't get their product they were expecting. Yeah. All right, guess what we did?
We had some great conversations today.
We did, yes. Thank you, Ed, for showing up here. I had my list of people to thank, which I shouldn't need, but here it is. All right. All right, are you ready?
Yes, let's hear your list.
It says thanks. Oh, there's more. All right. Thanks to Mike Hanley of Cars.com. Thank you, Ed Piotrowski, for joining us in studio this week. Thank you, Jill. Thank you to producer Randy. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at ConsumerGuide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at CarStuff@ConsumerGuide.com.